My guest at this time is attorney Alan Dershowitz. For many years, he taught at Harvard University Law School. He is a prominent civil liberties lawyer and also a frequent commentator on the Middle East. His new book is The Case Against the Iran Deal, How Can We Now Stop Iran from Getting Nukes? Mr. Dershowitz believes it is a given that President Obama will win the current showdown with Congress over the Iran nuclear deal, so lawmakers ought to focus next on how to enforce it as firmly as possible. And Mr. Dershowitz, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much. Now, the deal itself starts with a reaffirmation by Iran that it will never, ever, under any circumstances, seek to obtain, develop, or secure nuclear weapons. But nobody has ever heard of that because there is, I believe, a private secret agreement between the United States and Iran that that part of the deal is not enforceable, that this is, in fact, only a 10-year deal, even though the deal itself, in the preliminary part of it, says that Iran reaffirms that it will never, ever, under any circumstances, develop nuclear weapons. So I think we're being sold a pig in a poke. I think we're being sold a different agreement than the agreement that the two parties, in fact, signed off on.
Well, let's talk about what you think Congress should do with that specific language, then. That's part one of your two-step recommendation here. How should that language be codified in an effective way?
Very simple. All Congress has to do, and there's already been several laws drafted to incorporate that, say we take seriously, we accept as American policy Iran's reaffirmation, that Iran's own promise that it will never, ever, under any circumstances, seek to develop nuclear weapons. We have to make that an enforceable, integral part of the deal, regardless of what the President of the United States had as a side deal with the Iranians. The deal itself says that. We're entitled to hold them to their words.
The next step, you say, is to preemptively approve tough punishment if Iran violates that language or other parts of the deal. Are you referring to a general promise to punish noncompliance or something specific?
Well, we need deterrence. We need to make sure that the Iranians know that there is a military option on the table if they cheat and if they rush to develop a bomb. Right now, they do not believe that the President of the United States will ever engage in military action against them, and they think they're free to do whatever they want. We need Congress to authorize the President in advance to use whatever is necessary, including military, to prevent Iran from ever developing nuclear weapons. I think if we get Congress to pass such a statute, it will send a very powerful message. Now, the president may veto it, but if he vetoes it, he's going to have a hard time explaining to his Democratic colleagues why he's vetoing a law which only repeats what's in the deal, number one, and number two, which repeats what he has already said, namely, he believes he has the authority and the will to use whatever is necessary to prevent Iran from developing weapons. So the strength of this proposal is it puts President Obama's feet to the fire. And it makes him tell the American public what this deal really is and what he's promised the Iranians.
How tough do you think it will be, sir, to confirm violations, to come up with proof that Iran is, in fact, violating that language when, as we now know, some of the terms of the deal allow Iran to self-examine military sites and test their own soil samples or at least gather them. So it might be more difficult to prove that they're cheating.
Right. Can you imagine the National Football League allowing football players to self-test, to produce whatever samples they would like to produce? Nobody would accept that, yet we seem to be accepting it. Look, it's a mixed picture when it comes to how we will make sure that they're not seeking to develop nuclear weapons. There are pretty tough and stringent restrictions in place on currently existing non-military aspects of the program. But when it comes to past and future discovered ones, the deal is extremely weak, extremely weak.
Let's talk a little bit about the big picture here. Obviously, you're strongly opposed to the deal. Let's talk about it in two different parts. First of all, what do you make of how the Obama administration has handled this process?
Well, I think it's been a terrible negotiation. In my book, The Case Against the Iran Deal, How Can We Now Stop Iran from Developing Nuclear Weapons, I document every mistake they've made from beginning to end. And I'm not alone in this assessment. Tom Friedman of the New York Times, many, many other experienced people believe that when President Obama took the military option off the table after the midterm elections, he basically gave the Iranians a free ride. That we were negotiating with them as equals. You don't negotiate with equals as equals with a, when you're a superpower and you're negotiating with a relatively weak power. We gave up our competitive advantage. So we've taken the military option off the table. We've taken the sanctions off the table. We have nothing. And that's why we crossed several of our own red lines, and the Iranians really didn't cross any of their red lines. They're going around boasting how great this deal is. And virtually every, you know, anti-American person in the world is jumping up and down with joy. People like Noam Chomsky, who hate America, you know, love this deal. People who have been antagonistic to America over the years love this deal. And I think it's many true patriots, and nobody should question our patriotism, are very critical of this deal. Now, that doesn't mean that the president is wrong when he says if Congress rejects the deal, it might cause problems. Of course it might cause problems, but he got us into the situation where he's given us the choice between a bad deal and a maybe even worse outcome. That's why we need to try to do something that understands that the deal is probably going to be accepted. But let's accept the whole deal, including the preface, the preliminary statements, where Iran reaffirms that it will never under any circumstances seek to develop or obtain nuclear weapons. If we do that, we can salvage the bad parts of this deal as well as some of the good parts of this deal. And there are some good parts.
Your thoughts briefly, sir, on how Congress has handled this. Obviously, the president refused to clarify it as a treaty. Some say Congress should have fought that perhaps in court or somewhere else. Instead, they went with the Corker-Cardin plan, which gave Congress a voice, but it essentially flipped the script, requiring two-thirds to reject the deal instead of accept the deal. What's your take on how the congressional leadership handled this?
Well, in my book, I argued even before the result was known that the Corker deal assured the president of victory, that by, as you put it well, turning it around and instead of requiring two-thirds in favor of the deal, requiring two-thirds to be against the deal, it assured the president of victory. But remember, the victory is a technical victory in the sense that the majority of Americans opposed the deal. According to a Pew poll, only 21% of Americans, that's one in five, support the deal. A majority of the House opposes the deal. A majority of the Senate opposes the deal. So you have to ask yourself, in a democracy, is this the way we ought to make important foreign policy decisions? The most recently elected branch of government has been the Congress, not the president. The president was elected, you know, 3 years ago, and the Congress was elected a year and a half ago. And so I think the president should have paid more attention to the American public, more attention to the House of Representatives and the Senate, and should have tried to do something that made the American public feel comfortable about this. He has a bully pulpit, and every time he's talked about the deal, the numbers have gone down. And that's not the way a president or an administration should deal with an important aspect of foreign policy. So, you know, in my book, I talk about how to move forward. I knew that the deal was going to be accepted when I wrote the book. I wrote it in 11 days after the deal was enacted, and I want to move forward now. I want to put this behind us and make sure that what everybody in America believes in, namely that Iran should never, ever be allowed to develop nuclear weapons, has some teeth in it, and we can really stop them from bringing about this international catastrophe, which would be a game changer, to quote the president. He said that himself. It would be a game changer. Let's not have a game changer.
Any feedback from Congress on your proposals for those two pieces of legislation?
Yes. I've gotten calls from a number of congressmen and senators who voted for the bill and who like my proposal, and who think my proposal will make them more comfortable with their own votes. I have to tell you, I've spoken to a number of senators and congressmen, not us, all of whom voted for the bill, pretty much. Not a single one of them told me they liked the deal. Not a single one of them told me they thought it was a good deal. The best they can come up with is maybe it's better than the alternative. It would be bad if Congress voted it down. But nobody that I've spoken to really has a good word to say about the deal itself.
Mr. Dershowitz, thank you very much for your time today, sir. We'll see how Congress acts and if they follow up on your recommendations. We appreciate your time.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Attorney Alan Dershowitz taught many years at Harvard University Law School. He's a prominent civil liberties lawyer and also a frequent commentator on the Middle East. His new book is The Case Against the Iran Deal: How Can We Now Stop Iran from Getting Nukes? I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.